Well, hello. This is Bill Allen, and it is a Tuesday afternoon. And yes, I am doing a Facebook lesson today. And yes, if you think this is a bit repetitive, it's because I did this at 3 o'clock, like I typically do. And then when I finish the lesson at 3:30 or so, try to share it to our other pages, West Irwin Live and West Irwin Church of Christ. And in doing so, somehow deleted this wonderful video. Normally, I would say, oh, well, you missed it, you snooze, you lose. But this one includes the story of Ruth, and that is just too great a story not to put back up. So here I am again. If you have watched it the first time, you have a pass to go ahead and turn the channel and do something else. But I have my Diet Coke and I am ready to roll. And so here we go. We are in the time of the judges. And in this time, it is the transition time between the leadership of Moses and Joshua and the taking of the promised land of Canaan. And the time of the United Kingdom of Israel under the kings Saul, David, and Solomon. In the meantime, the nation of Israel is mostly tribal states based on the tribes, and they have military leaders, primarily military leaders that are regional leaders that come along when the people are oppressed and bring them deliverance through the power of God. These are not necessarily good, righteous guys. Some of them may have their pluses, but a lot of them, including two of the ones we see today, have some issues. And so the cycle of the book of Judges is pretty simple. God blesses the people. The people stop serving him, and they start serving themselves. They go into immorality. They start worshiping the gods of the land of Canaan, the Baals and the Ashtoreths and all the others. And so God says, okay, fine, and allows the enemies of the Jews. They didn't kill them all off. It seems like they did, because when you're reading the book of Joshua and Judges, but they didn't. And so God uses them to discipline his people and bring them back to him. And he does that in a very difficult way. They are oppressed by their enemies, such as the Midianites in the time of Gideon, the Moabites under Deborah and Barak, or in this case, the Ammonites with Jephthah. And so we're going to be talking about them in just a moment. And when the people are oppressed, they repent, they go back to God, they say, we're sorry. Moses told us, Joshua told us this was going to happen. We were disobedient. Please forgive us and save us. And when they do, God sends a deliverer, a military leader, a judge. And these men and one woman, Deborah, included in the book of Judges, lead God's people and provide military leadership in order to bring them back their freedom and take away their oppressors. That's the cycle of the book of Judges. And then when they are there and they're blessed again and they have their freedom again, it all starts over with their sinfulness. That's the cycle repeated over and over again, in different regions of where the people are in the land of Canaan. Today, we're looking at two judges in a briefer way than I did before, that are two of the last ones. The last one will be Samuel. We'll read his story next Thursday, this coming Thursday. But Jephthah and Samson are the ones we're talking about today. And Jephthah is known for a vow he made, a rash vow. Jephthah was kind of an outlaw. He was a half brother to his brothers. His father had Jephthah through a woman other than his wife. And so the boys chased Jephthah out. He left and he became a renegade and an outlaw. Well, God caused the people again to be subject to the Ammonites this time because of their sinfulness. And the people, the leaders of Ammon, said, you know who we need to help get us through this? And that's that guy, that outlaw, Jephthah. And so they promise that he'll be their leader if he'll come back and save them. And he comes back and he begins to save them. He goes to God in prayer and in Judges chapter 11, and he vows a vow. He tells God, if you'll just give me this victory, Whatever is the first thing that comes out of my home to greet me when I come home in victory, I will sacrifice to you. Well, God gives him the victory, and lo and behold, it wasn't his fattened calf or a sheep or a goat or a ram that came out. It was his own daughter. And Jephthah told his daughter what happened, and she said, "You can't go back on your word to the Lord. You vowed a vow." And we've studied about that in the law. We'll see it again in the book of Ecclesiastes. Jesus talks about it in the Sermon on the Mount. If you're going to vow a vow, you don't have to, but if you do, be sure and keep it. And so she says, I don't expect you to deny your vow, but give me some time with my friends. And so he does, and she mourns during that time. And when she comes back, Jephthah fulfills his vow. Well, what happened there? Well, a couple of quick things. Number one, you don't compound the sin of a rash vow with the sin of killing an innocent girl. That is just not God's will. That's not what he wants. What do you do then, Bill? Well, I think you ask for forgiveness and you repent and you offer up other things to sacrifice to God, knowing that he doesn't want you to take an innocent human life. And so I think that's one thing. Another possibility is what happened with Samuel. Samuel's mother also made a vow. She was had no children. And she asked God that if he would give her a child, that he would, that that child would be given back to the Lord to serve him in his tabernacle under the priest. And that's exactly what happened with Samuel. Maybe that's what happened with Jephthah's daughter as well. I just don't know. I do know that my mother was right when she told me time and again, two wrongs don't make a right. And so I don't think that Jephthah would have been pleasing to God if he had vowed a vow that he would kill his, whatever came out, and then it was his daughter, and so he had her put to death. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's what God would have wanted. And so there's a couple of options there. But that's the story of Jephthah in Judges chapters 11 and 12. That leads us to Samson. And everybody knows the story of Samson and Delilah, or at least parts of it. They know Samson was the strong man, strongest man of his time. They also know that there was something about his hair. Now, what in the world is all of that? Well, Samson's mother's father's name was Manoah. His mother's name, we don't know. So I call them Mr. and Mrs. Manoah. And they could not have children. And so they prayed and prayed and prayed. And finally, an angel of the Lord himself came and appeared to Mrs. Manoah, first of all, and said, "You're going to have a child." And then appeared to both of them together, said, "You're going to have a child, but this is going to be a special child. He's going to be a Nazarite from the womb." Just like with Jeremiah and Isaiah and John the Baptist, they were called to serve the Lord from the womb. Same with Samson. He would be a Nazarite. We talked about the Nazarites. A special vow, not required, but if you take it, then you're not to have anything from the vine, no grape juice, no wine, no nothing like that, no grapes, and you're not allowed to have a razor touch your head, so you can't cut your hair. And that's how Samson got his strength. The Lord blessed him because he stayed faithful to that vow. Well, when Samson grows up, he falls in love with a Philistine woman and gets his parents to sign off on him taking her as his wife, even though she was a Philistine, one of the enemies of the Jews and not of the people of Israel. And so he goes to the Philistines and he asks for her hand in marriage, and they don't want him to do it. And so they go back and forth a while. Ultimately, Samson gives them this riddle. He had killed a lion with his bare hands, and when he came back by, the lion had died, of course, and the carcass now had a beehive in it that was making honey. And so Samson took some of the honey, and he had this riddle that he gave to the Philistines. And so they made a bet, and he gave them that riddle. He said, if you solve the bet, then I'll pay. If I solve the bet, then you pay. And they couldn't figure it out, and so they try to get his the girl that he loved to find out the truth, and she does, and then she tells them. And so Samson is really mad. He takes 300 foxes, ties their tails together, puts a torch in there, and turns them loose in a grain field, and their grain is destroyed. Lots of bad stories associated with some of the people that God uses for good, including Samson. Well, Samson continues on. They give that woman to someone else, and he falls in love with another Philistine woman by the name of Delilah. And he goes to them, and he wants Delilah to be his wife. And so he tries to he marries her. And the Philistines are trying to get to Samson and the source of his strength because he's the strongest man around. They can't defeat him. So they get Delilah to say, "Hey, look, you're one of us. You need to find out the truth." So she goes to Samson and he says, "Well, if you tie me up, then I'll lose my strength." And so she does, and she says, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you," and he just rips open the ropes and goes right along. Well, she goes to him and she whines and she cries and she nags and she says, "I thought you loved me. You haven't told me the truth. You made me look like a laughing stock in front of my friends and my people." And so he says, "Well, if you tie me up with new ropes, that's it." Same thing. Samson, the Philistines are upon you, ties him up after he's asleep. He just throws off the ropes and kills the Philistines. She tells him again, "You know, you're not being truthful with me. You're making me look like a fool in front of my people. Why won't you tell me? Do you really love me?" And Samson says, "Well, if you tie my hair up in seven braids." And this is where it gets pretty close, because remember, it's involving his hair. It's the Spirit of God, but it's because he is a Nazirite. And as a Nazirite, he's not to cut his hair. So he tells her, "Tie it up in seven braids." So she does while he's asleep. This guy's a really heavy sleeper, I think. But she ties his hair up in seven braids and wakes him up. "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." And sure enough, he breaks through all the braids and no problem, kills the Philistines. Well, she comes to him one more time and she says, "I can't believe that you won't tell me the truth. You must not love me. You're making me a fool." And he tells her the truth. "I took a vow. It's a Nazirite vow. And the source of the power is in my being faithful to that vow, which includes not cutting my hair." So when he's asleep, Delilah gets the razor and cuts his hair. And then she calls her friends, the Philistines, one more time. The soldiers come and she wakes him up. "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." And Samson thinks that he can do it just like he did before, and yet he's not. The Philistines capture him. He has no strength because he allowed her to cut his hair and told her a secret. And so while he was asleep, she cut his hair, and now he has no power. And so they take him captive. They take out his eyes. He's blind. And they bring him out ever so often just to mock him and to give them some entertainment. But something happens during that time. Samson's hair begins to grow back. And towards the end of his life, he is beginning to receive some more of his power. And they have this big celebration at their castle. And they call out Samson to entertain them. And Samson tells the man who is guiding him, "Put me right in between the two pillars, the two columns that support the castle." And they tell him, "Okay." So he does. And Samson, with his strength, cries out, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he pushes apart those columns. And sure enough, the whole tower comes crumbling down. And Samson kills more at his death of the Philistines and the enemies of God's people than he did even while he was alive. Not saying that was right. There's a lot of things the Bible talks about that just happened. But what we do know is that the Philistines were the enemies of God's people, and they were unrighteous and pagan worshipers and immoral and cruel, and God was able to punish them. But he used Samson, this very flawed military leader of the Jews, in one last way. Well, the book of Judges is like that. The recurring refrain is people did what they felt in their heart was right because there was no king in Israel at the time. So there was no unity. There was no real central government. There was nothing. Everybody did what they felt like was right. That's what the book of Judges says several times. And that leads us to the story of Ruth. Ruth is not one of the judges, but the story of Ruth, it's in a separate book, the book of Ruth, right after the book of Judges. But it does take place during the time of the judges, somewhere between 1300 and 1100 BC. King Saul takes over around 1100. King David comes 40 years later. And so this is the time period between Joshua, after he dies, and the start of the monarchy under King Saul. And that's where we find this wonderful story of the book of Ruth. It is four chapters. It's not very long. And I hate that the previous lesson that I recorded didn't have it, but I'm going to try to retell it because it's just a story that begs to be told. It is such a wonderful, wonderful story. Well, the book of Ruth doesn't begin with Ruth. The book of Ruth actually begins with a woman by the name of Naomi and her husband Elimelech. They were Jews. They were living in the land of Judah, somewhere near Bethlehem, and that's significant later. But Elimelech and Naomi, again, were Jews. They had two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, and then a famine came. And they, to find relief, they had to leave the country, and they went to the neighboring area of Moab. The Moabites were enemies of the Jews. In fact, the law said no Moabite can be found among God's people. That's how bad the rift was between the descendants of Abraham and the descendants of Moab. And so Elimelech and Naomi have to go there, and they take their sons, Mahlon and Chilion. Well, while they're there, their two sons marry Moabite women. I know, not according to the law, but at the same time, they were of marrying age. They probably had no idea how long they were going to be there, so they went ahead and married. And they married, one of them married a woman by the name of Orpah, and the other one married a woman by the name of Ruth. They were both Moabite women. Well, as time passes, Naomi's husband, Elimelech, dies in Moab, and her sons, Mahlon and Chilion, they also die. And so Naomi is left there in the land of Moab with her two Moabite daughters-in-law, all three now widows, Naomi, the mother, and now Ruth and Orpah, widows as well, daughters-in-law of Naomi. Naomi hears that there's been relief in her land, and so she says, "I'm going home. No reason for me to stay here. I'm going home. You girls stay here, find good Moabite men, get married, have a great life. Thank you for all the help you've been to me." Well, Ruth and Orpah cry, and they say, "No, no, 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 no. We'll stay with you. We'll go with you. We'll do whatever you want." And Naomi says, "Look, I'm too old to raise up a son now that would be able to marry you and give you children. That's you need to stay here. This is your people. This is your land. You stay here and you find Moabite men and you marry and have a great life." Well, Orpah says, "Okay, I'm out." Ruth says, "I'm not out." In fact, these words that Ruth speaks, you have probably heard, and you have probably heard him in a wedding ceremony. Like 1 Corinthians 13, that passage, love is patient, love is kind, love does all these good things, love doesn't do any of these bad things, all of that. Well, that's found in 1 Corinthians 13, but it's not a wedding ceremony. It's talking about how Christians are to treat each other and others. But it's very applicable to a husband and wife, and so I love to use it in weddings. Same with this passage from Ruth, but it is not meant between a husband and a wife. There's great application there, and it's okay to use it there. I love it used there. But rather, it is between a daughter-in-law and her mother-in-law. See if you recognize these words starting in Ruth chapter 1, verse 16. But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. You've heard that, right? You've probably even heard the old song, "Whither thou goest, I will go." And the bass is, "I will go." That song is sung at weddings. That scripture is recited at weddings, read in weddings. And I think, again, that's very, very appropriate. Super. Wonderful commitment between a husband and a wife. But at the same time, originally, those words of deep devotion and love were given from a daughter-in-law to her mother-in-law. And not just any daughter-in-law, but a foreigner, a Moabite, the enemy of the Jews, tells her Israeli, her Jewish mother-in-law, Naomi, "Where you go, I will go. Where you live, I will live. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Your people will be my people, your God, my God." And then she says a vow very clearly. "May God deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything other than death parts the two of us." It's just an incredible, incredible message. Naomi gets the message. Naomi looks at Ruth and says, "Well, okay then. I don't know what we're going back to. I can't promise you anything." Ruth says, "I'm staying. I'm going with you. I'm going with you. I'm not leaving your side." And so they go back. They go back to their land, and Naomi changes her name from Naomi, which means blessed, to Mara, which means bitter. "Call me bitter because the Lord has been bitter to me," she says. Her people hear her story, and they all mourn. Of course, they all mourn with her over the loss of her husband and the loss of her sons. But she has Ruth, and Ruth becomes a part of Naomi's household when they return to Bethlehem, where they lived. And so in Ruth chapter 2, Ruth and Naomi decide we gotta have sustenance. We gotta figure out a way to live. And so Ruth goes to a neighboring field and works there the field. Now, according to the law, God provided for those who were poor, for those who were widows or orphans, for those who were immigrants and had no property, no way to make a living, that once the workers of the owner of the field went through the crops, then they weren't to go through a second time and try to get everything they missed. They were to leave that for those who were needy. And that's what Ruth did. She waits behind the workers and she goes through the field and she gathers something for her and for Naomi. Ultimately, Boaz comes back and he sees her and he doesn't recognize her. And he asks one of the workers, "Who is that?" And he says, "Well, that's Ruth the Moabitess. She's the one that came back with Naomi after Naomi's husband died." Well, Boaz says, "Oh yeah, I've heard of her. She's got quite a great reputation here. How she has been devoted to her mother-in-law, how she's come back and made this her home, this people her people." He said, "Here's what I want you to do. I want you to help her. Don't make fun of her. Don't put her in any danger, but I want you to protect her. And plus, I want you to help her along so that she doesn't know what she's doing. So make sure that she gathers enough and plenty for her and for her mother-in-law." And so that's what happens. So when Ruth goes home, she's got this great big old basket of food. I mean, she's got lots and lots and lots. And Naomi says, "What in the world?" And Ruth says, "Well, I don't know. I was gathering in a field that was owned by a man named Boaz, and he made sure I had all of this." And Naomi says, "Well, the Lord has not stopped looking after us after all," she says. "That man Boaz is one of our kinsmen redeemers. He's one of our people who can possibly be that person who comes in and helps. Remember the law of levirate marriage, where if a man died and he left a widow and they had no children, the brother was to marry that widow, and the first child would carry on his brother's heritage. And Boaz was in that line. And Naomi knew that. And so she said, "You stay there. He'll take care of you. He sounds like he's a good guy." And Ruth does that. Ruth does that. And then we get to Ruth chapter 3. And you know, there's something about a single guy or a single woman that just makes a married woman. Especially a mom or a grandma, they just have to take care of that. Well, it's not quite that simple. It was important for Naomi and Ruth that they be taken care of. And Naomi looks at Ruth and she says, "You know, I need to find you a husband. Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match." You know, the old Fiddler on the Roof scene. So anyway, she says, "Look, there's nobody better than Boaz, and he is in the line. So here's what I want you to do. I want you, in the middle of the night, when he's had enough to drink and he's asleep in his bed, I want you to go and lie down at the foot of his bed, at his feet, and cover yourself up, and he'll tell you what to do from there." And so she does. And Boaz wakes up during the night and he's startled and he sees Ruth there and he says, "Who are you?" And she says, "I am Ruth." And he says, "Well, you've really blessed me by not going after the younger men. Boaz was an older man, Ruth, obviously, a younger widow. And he said, "There are other men you could have gone after," but basically he understands what Ruth is doing. He sees that she is willing to be his wife if she will have him, if he will have her. And so he tells her, "Okay, here's what we're going to do. Don't say anything to anybody, but I'll take care of this." And he has her leave before daylight, so that no one makes, the gossip doesn't get going. And the next, and Ruth goes back to Naomi, and Naomi says, "Okay, Ruth, what happened?" And she tells her, and Naomi says, "Okay, don't worry about it. He's got this. He's gonna, believe me, he's gonna take care of this and soon." And sure enough, that's exactly what happens. Well, all business deals at that time happened at the city gate. That's where they met. That's where they made their agreements. And so Boaz goes there the next day, and he's waiting at the city gate because he tells Ruth, "Look, I would love to do this, but there's someone that's ahead of me in the line of Elimelech. I'm not the next one in line, but I'll take care of this." And so when that man comes the next day to the city gate, and Boaz is there, and the leaders of the city are there, Boaz tells him, "Well, Ruth has come back with her mother-in-law Naomi. You know, Elimelech, your relative, has died. Mahlon and Chilion have died. And so the estate is yours if you want it." He says, "Oh, yeah, man, I'll take it." But Boaz says, "Well, if you take the estate, then you also have to take Ruth as your wife and support her and Naomi." And the man says, "Well, I can't do that. I got family of my own. I got responsibilities of my own. I can't do that." And so they have this tradition where they take off a sandal and they announce that they are giving up their right to that estate, and to Ruth the Moabitess, the woman who had taken care of Naomi. And Boaz announces he is willing to take them on to take care of Naomi, to take care of Ruth, and to marry her, so that Ruth the Moabite woman would become his wife. And that's exactly what happens. Boaz and Ruth marry, and now Ruth and Naomi are going to be taken care of. But there's more to the story than that. Remember I told you where they live? Bethlehem? Does that sound familiar? Well, in Ruth chapter 4, after Boaz marries Ruth, and everyone witnesses this. It's a wonderful day. It's a great, great thing. They give them, the people, the elders, and all the people at the gate give them their blessings. "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home, Boaz, like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephratah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." Another woman that had a little bit of a difficult story, but we'll come back to that in a moment. Verse 13 continues in Ruth chapter 4. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And the two of them had a child. They had a son. Verse 14, the women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer," that kinsman redeemer. "May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth." Talking about Ruth, the Moabitess, which was a powerful thing to say when Naomi had lost her husband and her two sons. "Here is Ruth taking care of you better than seven sons." And verse 16 is one of the most powerfully emotional moments that you'll read in Scripture. Ruth 4:16, "Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, Naomi has a son, and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, Jesse the father of King David." And so this child that Ruth bears, this Moabite woman bears to Boaz to carry on the line of Naomi and Elimelech, this child becomes the grandfather of King David, which means that Ruth, this Moabite woman, is found in the line of King David as his great-grandmother. It's an incredible and wonderful, wonderful story. God takes care of us. He took care of Naomi, providing her with this grand, incredible woman by the name of Ruth. He took care of Ruth by providing a husband for her, Boaz. He took care of Boaz, providing a wife for him, this Moabite woman, faithful, loving, devout, committed woman by the name of Ruth. We still name our daughters today Ruth. Isn't that amazing? And God took care of his people. He provided a heritage. He provided a line. He provided that descendant of Abraham, King David, who was also descended from this Moabite woman, Ruth. King David would ultimately have children, and down the line, they would be born in the ancestry of King David, a son in Bethlehem of Judea by the name of Jesus. God takes care of us. I hope and pray that you are reminded today of how wonderful our great God is, of how much He loves you, of that devotion and love that He calls us to have for one another and for Him, and of the great presence that God is in not just Ruth's life, not just Naomi's life, not just the life of Boaz or even the life of his people, in your life. I look forward to telling the story of Samuel and the first king of Israel, King Saul, on Thursday. God bless.